All right, well, without further ado, I'd like to welcome our first speaker, Dr. Mary Beth Morrissey. She is with the Global Healthcare Innovation Management Center at Fordham University Graduate School of Business Administration. And the title of her talk is Public Health Policy Process, Formulating and Implementing National Agendas in Public Health, a grassroots campaign to build national policy agenda in aging in the public health section.
Thank you so much, Dr. Levy Storms, and it's our pleasure to be here today. So I'm going to jump right in so we can begin discussing the policy process. Just by way of background, my work is interdisciplinary and spans health law and policy, public health, social work, research, and bioethics. I served as the policy committee chair for the aging and public health section from 2010 until this month, when I'm pleased to be turning it over to my colleagues Pat Alt and Nathan Boucher. And in terms of the charge that I and the committee had from the section, that charge was to generate interest in policy issues in the policy committee and also the policy process. So my objectives this morning are very modest. I'm going to describe the policy development process, identify the critical steps that we agreed upon as being crucial to the process that we followed, provide a couple of examples of policy successes, and then discuss implications for future policy planning. So most of my remarks will be directed to the policy that was adopted last November here at the Governing Council meeting. That policy is titled Supporting Public Health's Role in Addressing Unmet Needs in Serious Illness and at the End of Life. And then I'll also talk a little bit about the policy that will be voted on today, recognizing Alzheimer's disease and cognitive decline as a public health issue. So moving into the critical phases of the policy process, and one of the reasons we wanted to share our experience with this process with you this morning is that we thought that really some of what we're going to be talking about might be transferable to the policy process that you're working on in other sections. So the first goal was really to strengthen the foundations of the policy process through building grassroots support for policy change, diversifying the policy committee membership, and working toward development of an agenda that was broadly supported by the section and consistent with the goals of the section. So I'm pleased to report on some of the milestones that we achieved in this period. First of all, I have here that we doubled our membership, but actually I think it's closer to tripling our membership. We started out with about 5 people, and now we're up around 12 or 15. So that's really exciting. And these changes occurred during the very innovative leadership of Dr. Miller, Dr. Levy Storms, and the head of the section today, Dr. Friedman. We also have an end-of-life work group under the committee that is led by Dr. Boucher, and they are doing a lot of innovative work. Kate Morrison, who's a member of the section, has done a lot to help us with blogging and other social media. And I already mentioned the two policies that we're going to be focusing on. So one of the most important things in the policy process is really to frame the public health problem and identify the policy gaps. And of course, APHA each year does identify policy gaps. So it's always important to look at those gaps that APHA has identified and see whether the problem that you're looking at or that we were looking at is consistent with any of the gaps they identified. So the problem that we identified for the palliative care policy was that there really was no national level policy in palliative care. There was a previous policy on end of life that Dr. Miller had worked on, but we all agreed that there was a need to expand that policy. A little bit more about the gap. A call for expansion of the previous policy, and there was a strong strong support for this policy focus. And of course, we were very lucky that we had a number of experts on the committee, especially Dr. Miller, who has done so much exciting research in this area, to support our process and our exploration of the issues. So the other key step here is collection of the scientific evidence. And of course, this is a step that's identified by APHA in their policy guidelines. This was a very rigorous process that we went through, engaging in review of the science, including previous APH policies, and then collecting the evidence that supported the policy goals. So here is, some information on the robust body of evidence that we collected. The evidence spanned the need among diverse populations. And by the way, even though we are the aging and public health section, the policy targeted diverse populations, not only older adults. Types of palliative care, ranging from pediatric palliative care to ICUs, a lot of diversity there. The distinction between palliative care and hospice and some of the issues with hospice in today's environment. We also looked at costs and perhaps most importantly, workforce development and the workforce needs for supporting this type of policy change. The other data collection that we moved through was conducting interviews with key informants, such as the section leaders and scholars, who had played a major role in the policy process, who had authored previous policies, and also who were out in the community, and in the scholarship community and the practice community, addressing some of these issues. I mentioned Dr. Miller, who's a leading researcher nationally, and we're certainly grateful to have her in our section, who was very helpful to us in sharing some of her research as well as some of the other research that helped to address the cost issues. And perhaps if I had to identify the most important thing to the policy process, it would probably be collaboration. Collaboration is so key in making this process work. This is not something that is undertaken by one individual, but by colleagues who are committed to a highly participatory process, and that process extended, again, from the earliest stages to the policy drafting. We went through many revisions, looking at the APHA policy guidelines, and always going back to the committee, with the revised draft, with the new evidence we had collected, and really, until we had reached what I call a saturation point and were comfortable with what we had come up with. So again, intensive policy drafting and revision process. The policy proposal here in APHA, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, goes to the Joint Policy Committee. Actually, it took us about 2 years to finish this policy. On the first round, we got some significant comments from the Joint Policy Committee, and then we spent the summer working on them, and then we resubmitted it the following February. And then the second cycle, it was much easier for us because we had done a lot of the heavy lifting. The other important piece of the process occurs not only within the committee, but externally, reaching out to sections here in APHA, a number of sections that supported our work, including the ethics SPIG, but also externally in the larger community. I know the Joint Policy Committee gave us one comment that we should try to garner support from a community-based group. So we did do that, and we reached out to the Community-Based Collaborative for Palliative Care in Southern New York State, and a couple of their members reviewed the policy, gave us some feedback, and that was very, very helpful. The Alzheimer's policy, which is, again, going to be voted on this morning, had a lot of support as well. About nine sections supported that policy. So we're optimistic that we'll have a successful outcome this morning. The Joint Policy Committee review process, as well as the Governing Council meeting, which I attended, is really a wonderful process to participate in. I think, based upon my policy experience, I would say that APHA probably has one of the most rigorous policy processes that I've worked with. So I think we're a model, really, for the rest of the nation. As I mentioned, as we move through the process, a hearing is held at the beginning of the APHA annual meeting. That hearing gives the other sections an opportunity to speak to the policy. We had a couple of changes that were requested on the language, And that's, you know, part of the consensus building process. So the other exciting piece of the process, and I want to thank Dr. Boucher in particular, and two student representatives that we had working with the section, who did a lot of exciting work on dissemination of the APHA policy. And actually, Dr. Miller had shared with us early on that this was probably the more challenging piece of the policy process, even more challenging than formulating the policy and getting it approved by APHA. So we employed, here again, collaborative policy dissemination strategies. And here were some of the things that we worked on. Dr. Boucher and the students drafted a press release, and we were lucky enough to have that lead to the publication of the press release in a peer-reviewed journal. Many of us did research presentations at different national conferences identifying the components of the policy. Most recently, I also worked on a report for the Gerontological Society of America on pain that just came out this October, in which the policy and certain critical components of the policy were cited. And the last thing that we did, particularly in light of the transition in leadership, and I think this is a very important process for policy as well as for all committees in terms of helping support transitions in leadership, we wrote a protocol for the policy committee and the policy committee process, which identifies all these key steps so that leaders that follow us will have a sense of what we've done and really of the important foundations we've laid for future work. So concluding comments, a collaborative approach to policy development drawing on section and external resources, we felt was demonstrated to be effective in integrating, in the first instance, palliative care into the health reform movement, building consensus around goals to achieve, to help achieve the ACA triple aims of better health, better health care, and lower costs. And the key to success was data collection, review of the scientific evidence that would support and sustain policy change. So our agenda for the future is sharpening the focus on national policy development. I mentioned that the Alzheimer's policy will be voted on today. Our next step is to work on a comprehensive pain policy. Although the palliative care policy did address issues surrounding pain, we're really focusing now on developing a much more comprehensive policy. And again, that's in response to need. As you know, there's a real need among diverse populations for better pain management. So thank you so much for your attention this morning, and I welcome the comments of my colleagues and follow up to my presentation. Thank you.
We have a couple of minutes, and so I just wanted to open it up if someone had a quick question. I have a question.
Yes.
Dr. Morrissey. How different or similar do you think the process that we've gone through in our section on this particular policy statement is to what other sections do?
Well, I haven't worked that closely with any of the other sections, but we do receive the proposals, and we're asked to support some of those proposals. I would like to think that We're certainly setting an example for some of the other sections in terms of the rigorous process we've developed. And I think that certainly we do see among all the sections a high level of collaboration. So I would say that's really a commonality across all the sections, is that critical collaboration that has to be achieved in order to have a successful policy development.
Okay, great. Yes.
I think that's an excellent
question to you. What happens?
I think that's an excellent question, and as I tried to outline, we certainly have worked on dissemination, but even beyond dissemination, of course, implementation is a part of the process, and I think you're going to hear about the implementation piece from my colleagues, Dr. Levy-Storm, Dr. Alden, Dr. Boucher. You're going to address different components of the implementation, but you're absolutely correct. The process does not stop with policy formulation or even dissemination. We have to move toward implementation and trying to influence, the multiple sectors across the country to which this policy would be relevant.